Live from the nation's capital, President Joe Biden and comedian Colin Jost headlined the White House Correspondents' Dinner. See all the biggest stars together in one room live April 27th at 8 p.m. on CNN and streaming on Max.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Good evening, I'm Caitlin Collins on a roller coaster ride of legal developments for Donald Trump tonight. The former president experiencing both the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat all in a single day. Two rulings issued just about an hour apart here in New York. And tonight he and we have new dates, new deadlines, and new dollar amounts. First, the bad news if you're Donald Trump tonight. April 15th, tax day, is the day that Donald Trump is going to become the first former president to face a criminal trial. It's perhaps the only one that might be held before the election, based on what we know now. And the judge in the Stormy Daniels hush money case flatly denying his legal team's efforts to delay the trial any further or to toss it out altogether, sending Trump on a tear as he left the courtroom today.
They'd like the trial to start in 21 days or something. And I don't know how you can have a trial that's going on right in the middle of an election. Not fair. Should have been started 3 years ago if they were going to start it at all. And then you wouldn't be quibbling over what week it's going to end, days. They didn't start it because they didn't know I'd be running and they didn't know how well I'd do.
That is not why this criminal trial is about to start. But ironically enough, when he was asked earlier if he was worried that a conviction could actually cost him the 2024 election, Trump said this.
Well, it could also make me more popular because the people know it's a scam.
The former president, as you might expect after hearing a comment like that one, is planning to turn the courtroom drama into the campaign trail and to play the victim. Really, though, only time will tell if it'll pay off for him. There was a ruling that did get Donald Trump's respect, as he put it today. That's the one by a New York appeals court at the 11th hour, cutting that bond that he has to pay by more than half as he appeals his civil fraud case. It's now $175 million instead of nearly half a billion. And they gave him 10 more days to secure that bond.
I greatly respect the decision of the appellate division, and I'll post either $175 million in cash or bonds or security or whatever is necessary very quickly within the 10 days. And I thank the appellate division for acting quickly.
It speaks to how worried Donald Trump was about that half a billion dollar bond that he is now happy about only having a $175 million one. I have some new reporting tonight. A person familiar with his finances tells me that they do expect Trump will be able to secure that much lower bond within the next 10 days, as the court ordered today. But it won't be without difficulty, and it could also notably reduce the cash that he has available to him. If not for this last hour reprieve, the state could have started seizing his assets today, or as he referred to them this morning, his babies. I want to bring in CNN political analyst and senior political correspondent for The New York Times, Maggie Haberman, who was in that courtroom today as all of this was playing out. What was Trump's demeanor like?
So Trump was actually more subdued for part of it than we saw him in the second E. Jean Carroll trial, than he was in the Angoron trial, where he was constantly scowling, shaking his head. He did do some of that, to be clear, and he did start fidgeting. He got most visibly irritated, and this is right before the ruling came down, reducing the size of the bond, as Justice Merchan was questioning Trump's lead lawyer, Todd Blanche, who had a rough morning with Justice Merchan. Did not believe in what Todd Blanche was saying about why the trial should be delayed, did not believe in what Todd Blanche was saying about why he believed that the DA's office had committed significant misconduct in terms of not turning over specific documents related to Michael Cohen. And this went on and on and on for a while. And Trump was just staring at his lead lawyer as this was going on. Now, my understanding is that Trump was directing his ire toward Merchan, not toward his lawyer. And we know Trump can be very tough on his legal teams. But then he got this reprieve. And so after that, he was entirely changed in his demeanor when he came back into the courtroom after
You
the
could
recess.
Tell that his mood had shifted.
100%. And he was smiling at somebody in the audience, and he sat down and was less irritated. He shook his head and made sort of one of these faces we've come to see him make when the judge set the trial date. But that was unusual this morning.
What do you think it'll be like, though? I mean, do you think it's set in for him that the trial's actually starting in 3 weeks?
Absolutely not. Now, I'm told that he does understand that this is not likely that he's going to win on appeal. It's a slim to none chance in trying to delay this further and that the trial will start in 21 days. But I don't think this is going to become real for him until we get much closer to it. And Caitlin, I have to say that sitting in that courtroom for him 4 days a week, there's going to be a pause on Wednesdays, but 4 days a week in this very dingy sort of bonfire of the vanities type courtroom is going to be pretty interesting to watch.
I mean, for someone though who kind of is described as stuck in the 1980s.
Correct. Preserved in amber. Yeah. I don't know that being stuck in the Manhattan criminal court is exactly how he had in mind being that way.
I mean, and it's not just physically being in court. It's also being there while Michael Cohen could be testifying,
Correct.
Stormy Daniels, Correct. Karen McDougal. I mean, all of these moments that did not go well for Trump in the first year of his time in the White House, certainly not with his relationship with Melania Trump.
You're getting to the point that a lot of his aides will talk about privately, which is that they believe there is a chance of a hung jury in this case. There's always a chance of a hung jury, and this, you know, that's it just takes one. They know, and they believe that even if he's convicted, that it's not the worst fact set for him legally. Now, maybe that's true when you compare it to, you know, conspiracy to defraud the United States in terms of the J6 trial or the documents case in Florida. But it is a set of personal details that really get under his skin. As you noted, remember, he would in White House meetings just start talking about how, you know, he didn't actually have an affair with Stormy Daniels. And he would ask people what they thought of calling her horse face and on and on and on. And so this is going to get under his skin. What that means in terms of how he acts outside the courtroom, how he acts on the campaign trail, I think remains to be seen. But we have seen his ire with these cases bleed into his rallies, and I anticipate that will be the same because he's likely going to be doing events on weekends.
Well, I mean, he couldn't even stop talking about E. Jean Carroll right. after he was found to have defamed her, it was costing him a ton of money.
That was when he couldn't stop doing it. He had stopped doing it until he put up that bond, which was more than $90 million. And then when he did that, he started attacking her again. And so I do think that watching how one thing in court leads to something outside of court is going to be significant for all of us watching this campaign.
And afterward, he went to 40 Wall Street, one of the properties that could have been seized potentially by the attorney general in the other case, the civil fraud case. He held a press conference and you asked him a question, and this is how he answered.
Well, I shouldn't have a trial. This is not a trial. This is not an act of criminality.
But you are having one.
I don't know if we're having one. We're going to be appealing right now. I can tell you that. We did nothing wrong, just like I did nothing wrong in the other case. My statements, my financial statements, were conservative. They were low, not high. I mean, he valued Mar-a-Lago at a tiny fraction of what it is. He made Mar-a-Lago, you know it very well, Maggie. He made Mar-a-Lago into $18 million.
You were asking about this case,
Correct.
But he's pivoted very quickly to talking about, even though his bond was cut in less than half, still bothered by that, clearly.
Right. Well, I would actually say two things. I think that it was the one thing that he could treat like a success. So he tried to push it that way, number one. But number two, and that's, I think, how he was treating it throughout the day. But number two, I asked him about, does he think he can get acquittal? Because as you noted, he said at some point during this conversation with reporters, this is a scam. You know, this trial is a scam, so this will help me. These charges are a scam. It'll help me with voters. Well, if you think that, then I don't know why you wouldn't expect an acquittal and just want to get through this. So I was struck by his avoiding the answer.
And he was also, at one point, he was also, you know, saying that Biden is directing a lot of this and then saying, well, he didn't know if Biden was competent enough to direct it. But
he's both a mastermind and not capable of doing it.
Right, which was an argument. It contradicted itself in one sentence. But on his other claim he's been making that he wanted to use this money to fund his presidential campaign. I mean, he had not made one utterance of that before Friday.
No, he posted this on Truth Social, and what was incredible about it was that he posted the idea that, you know, I have all this cash, and I was going to use it to fund my campaign, but now I have to pay this judgment. And he has not funded his campaign since 2016, and even then, he only partially funded. He still raise donations. In 2020, he raised a significant amount of money as a sitting president. There has been no indication he was going to self-fund. He's not paying for his own lawyers right now. He is using donations from small-dollar donors to pay for his lawyers and to pay for the lawyers of other people. So that was a pretty clear straw man. Now, if he suddenly decides he's going to put a lot of money into his campaign, then we'll all be surprised. He is at a huge disparity with President Biden in terms of fundraising, but I don't expect that's where this is going.
On what we're hearing about, that they think that they can cover the 175.
Yeah, I've heard something similar. Yeah.
But it'll hurt his what he does have in cash.
Yeah, he doesn't have endless operating cash at his company. It's not clear to me if we're talking about actual cash or if we're talking about securities that he would have to liquidate. I don't know what the tax implications are. I do think that he will be able to do this more easily. But 10 days, if he seeks a bond, is not a lot of time. And to your point, if he puts it up in cash, look, they are looking at this to see, and, you know, others would have smarter takes on this than I will. I'm not a lawyer. But they are looking at this to see if this means that the appeals court in New York will ultimately reduce the judgment overall. And that's not going to happen for several months where they make a decision one way or the other. It's still going to hurt him in the short term.
Maggie Harbin, always great to have you on set.
Thank
after
you.
Being in the courtroom today. Thank you for that. We do have a lawyer here tonight. CNN's senior legal analyst, Ellie Honig, is here with me. Ellie, I mean, what you were just hearing about what this judgment is going to, or what this reduced bond is going to look like, whether or not he can cover it. Trump's attorney, one of them that actually argued and lost this case, Alina Habba, just weighed in on what happened today with that appeals court. This is what she said.
What happened today?
We won. You know, no, we didn't win. You know when we'll win? When we get this all reversed, which is what's going to happen. But, you know, I hope she took a little piece of humble pie today, because that's what was served to her. Just a little. But we'll be serving a lot more of that in the next couple years.
Wow. A boastful claim there by Alina Habba. The first thing she said was, we won. That's a premature declaration of victory, to say the least. That's like spiking the football at the 50-yard line. I mean, they got a nice ruling today, but to say we won is a ridiculous claim. She needs to sort of get with it a little bit here, because in any case, you're going to have decisions you win, decisions you lose. You're going to have ups and downs, and you can't get too down, and you certainly can't celebrate like you've just won the game when you get one pre-trial, pre-appeal, in this case, ruling.
Based on what Maggie was saying, that some people are going to be looking to see whether or not the appeals court reducing what the bond that Trump has to put up, does that mean they could potentially be more sympathetic and reducing the ultimate judgment here? What do you think?
So it's possible, but it's really important to understand. Donald Trump still owes $454 million. That's still the verdict. That's still the judgment amount. He will appeal that. What happened today has nothing to do with that. What happened today is a separate question of how much does he has to post in a bond while the appeal's ongoing. So he got that number reduced down to 175, but he still owes 454. Now, it does signal some acceptance by an appeals panel that the 454 amount was excessive for a bond. But first of all, he's going to get a different appeals panel when he actually appeals the case. And what happened today has no bearing on the actual judgment itself.
Is it normal for an appeals court to reduce something, a bond like this, by this much?
It happens, for sure. I think we talked about last week, there are examples of appeals courts reducing bonds by 80, 90%. There's a case that Trump cited in his brief where a $12 million bond was knocked down to $1 million. So it happens. It was a nice outcome for Trump today. It saved him quite a bit of heartache, I think, over the next couple weeks. But to claim that he won is ridiculous.
Does the interest still accrue in the meantime? Do we know?
Yeah, so I think that once the bond is posted, the interest stops accruing, because now you've secured it and things get put on hold.
Okay, so back to the hush money trial that's slated to start in 3 weeks, something that obviously Trump's team walked into that room today hoping to change. To what Maggie was saying about what this is going to be like to be in the court for 6 weeks, if that's how long it goes. What's that going to be like for Trump?
I don't think Donald Trump appreciates how grueling and how all-consuming and how stressful it is to be on trial. I mean, I've lived this. I used to try cases. I'd sleep 3 hours a night. I would, like, forget to eat. I would end up a physical wreck. He has to be there. And I wasn't even the one whose liberty was at stake. I was the prosecutor. I had the easy part. He has to be in that courtroom 4 days a week for 6 to 8 weeks. This is nothing like what we've seen so far in the civil cases, where he sort of comes and goes at will. He's there a day, he's not there a day. It's going to be exhausting. Look, he's defending himself. His liberty is at stake. And he's off the campaign trail for that time, too. So it's a whole different ballgame that he's about to enter.
What's your take on what happened today with the judge and Todd Blanche? Todd Blanche, for people who don't know, is Trump's lead counsel. He's not the only attorney in that room, but he was one of three, I believe, who were at the table today. What's your sense of that back and forth, and whether it's just a one-off happening today or what it can mean going forward?
Well, I think Todd Blanche overplayed his hand today. I think he argued more than he needed to, more than he credibly could have. He asked the judge to throw this case out based on a discovery violation, but discovery violations happen, and the evidence, as the judge found, showed that it was not intentional by the DA's office. And the problem is you have to protect your credibility, especially with the judge, especially with the jury. We're not there yet. But judges will decide pretty quickly, do I trust this lawyer or not? And if you don't, that's going to stick with you the whole trial. Todd knows that. I mean, I used to work with him at the Southern District of New York. So I think he made a mistake today, whether that was of his own volition or client service, I guess we would put it, is to be determined.
Yeah, I mean, the judge brought up that experience working at the SDNY and was saying,
he said, you should know better.
You should know better. Ellie Honig, great to have you. Maggie Heyman, thank you as well. Ahead here, we have reaction to Trump's big break on that bond from the man who co-wrote The Art of the Deal, where he sees all of this money drama going, plus the billions that could be coming Trump's way from his social media venture, why it's raising questions, that's coming up.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Of course, there are big questions of what today is going to mean for Trump on the campaign trail. Of course, he is going to be in court in 3 weeks from today, the first former president to ever face a criminal trial. And as he brought up multiple times today, the election and what this could mean for November, though he did say at one point that he believed it could potentially help him. He has also been claiming election interference and blaming President Biden, even though President Biden, of course, as we know, has had nothing to do with this. We have two of our best political strategists here to talk about this. Jamal Simmons, who worked in the Biden White House, and Alyssa Farah Griffin, who was the communications director in the Trump White House. And just looking at this, Alyssa, I mean, on the bond itself, Trump's getting basically 60% less than what he was initially going to have to pay. I think the question, you know, even though that was kind of a win for him today, he seemed much more fixated on that than the criminal trial that's fast approaching.
Yeah, listen, Donald Trump's got more lives than a cat. This was a huge win for him. He's today was objectively a good day, though some losses for him. The reality is this. Republican voters that I talk to of all stripes, even those who are not as favorable to Donald Trump, care very little about both the hush money case and this New York real estate case. They don't see it as having an impact on how they're going to vote on Election Day. The cases they do care about are January 6th, Fulton County, and the documents cases, all of which it's an open question if we'll see any of them resolved before Election Day. So Donald Trump continues to win so long as he's actually just buying time and running out the clock on those cases.
Right. Maybe it's one that his legal team doesn't view as much of a threat, even though, as Maggie was saying, it's personally, you know, one of the most difficult for him to deal with. But the calendar is real. And when you look at what he's going to be in court and how, as Ellie was describing, how many days he's going to be putting in, there is a real sense here of what this could mean for the campaign trail. But as he was talking about election interference today, I looked up. He's only done two campaign events in the last since Super Tuesday. That was 3 weeks ago. Even though he has not been in a courtroom, he's not necessarily vigorously campaigning.
No, that's right. And think about this. Joe Biden, who everyone says is this frail, you know, old man, has done, I think, five events in the last week. He's been to every swing state since the State of the Union. Right. He is running a really robust calendar in terms of the presidential schedule. So the president is out there. Listen, they're lapping Donald Trump on money. Right. The campaign did $53 million versus Trump's $16 million of fundraising in the last filing.
The Biden campaign.
The Biden campaign did 53 versus Trump 16. They are in a really good position. What they have to do, though, is to continue to make the message to the rest of the country about what they're going to do in the future and how another term of Biden-Harris is going to make everybody's lives better.
And do you think they're doing that enough, or is it
no.
just... I like the honesty.
No, they're not. I do this for a living. It's hard to know exactly what it is the proposals are going to be for next year. They've got to make that more robust. I think it's very helpful for us to talk a lot about what happened in the last 4 years, 3 years. But we've got to talk more about what's going to happen in the next 4 years, because campaigns aren't rewards for good behavior. They're always about the future, and they've got to be focused on that.
Well, and I'm go ahead.
Oh, so this money issue is very real for Donald Trump, by the way. So at this time in 2020, the RNC has $77 million cash on hand. Right now, they have $11 million. A factor in why I think cash on hand, I think a factor in why you're not seeing him out campaigning as fervently is doing those big rallies cost a lot of money. He's not in a position to do that. So I think you're going to see him rely more heavily on an earned media strategy.
Oh,
which
that's
is,
interesting. You think he's doing fewer events because he doesn't have any money.
I think it's definitely a factor. And it's part of it's the calendar, too, that he's going to be expected to be in a courtroom. But, yeah, going out in front of a courtroom and kind of making this speech, knowing networks are going to cut in and they're going to cover it, I think that's a big part of the campaign strategy.
Well, he was today talking about his campaign cash struggles and essentially what that has looked like. And he was asked, are you going to go into your own wallet to help you here? This is what he told reporters.
Are you going to start putting money into your campaign?
Yeah.
You haven't done that since 2016.
Well, first of all, it's none of your business, I mean, frankly. But I might do that. I have the option. But if I have to spend $500 million on a bond, I wouldn't have that option. I'd have to start selling things.
He said, yes. Then it went too quickly. I might use some of that money.
Yeah, even on cable television, we shouldn't use swear words. But that is not true. If anything, what we know about Donald Trump in recent history is, one, he hasn't spent any of his money since 2016. And two, he's actually been spending campaign cash on lawyers. So it's going in the reverse. So there's just no sense that he's on the verge of spending his own money in order to get himself
elected. And this is absolutely insane to me that Republicans are okay with this. If you're a down ballot candidate, you're in a vulnerable Senate seat or a potential Senate pickup as a Republican, knowing that the RNC is paying Trump's legal bills, that he's draining it, that we have the least money that we've had in decades to spend at this time in election cycle, this will have down ballot consequences, and it is purely of Trump's own doing.
There's one other thing about not doing events. If you're doing live events in states, those are organizing opportunities. So I know the field people have got to be pulling their hair out, because every one of those people who comes into an event, they get a ticket, they know their cell phone number, they know how to contact them. These are times where they're like grabbing up real live humans who can be helpful to the campaign. They're not doing that, which means if he's going to go a narrow casting strategy where he's just trying to get every single voter he can who agrees with him out, he's leaving a lot of voters on the table.
Well, and he keeps claiming election interference, but I mean, he's using this moment to benefit him. I mean, immediately after hearing from that appeals court, he was saying, you know, hands off Trump Tower, and was blasting out fundraising emails about the bond situation.
I think he does know that with these small dollar diehard donors, they are going to give if they feel like he's under attack. So he's going to lean into that strategy. But he also has this mindset. And I remember when I worked in the White House, if there's a crisis or something's bad is happening and the cameras are on me, I should use that to my advantage. So I think that's also a factor in it. Is he's thinking, if I have the media paying attention, even if it's for negative because it's a court trial, he's going to use that to make a statement about politics and try to lean into it.
Yeah, and we saw that statement from the Biden campaign also responding today, calling him weak and desperate, saying not just as a candidate, but also as a president. Jamal Simmons, Alyssa Farah Griffin, great to have you both here. And speaking of Donald Trump's mindset when it comes to his money and his finances, who better to ask about that than Tony Schwartz, the author who actually wrote The Art of the Deal, not Donald Trump, someone who's been speaking out publicly about this. We'll get his thoughts on the other side of a quick break. He has been found liable in court for being a serial fraudster in his business, but that hasn't put much of a ding, or really much less of a dent, and Donald Trump's supreme confidence to sell himself and protect his brand.
I have a lot of cash and a great company. I mean, to think they want to go after a company. This is a great company, a company that's doing very well. I've got very low debt on buildings like this building. I have very low debt on this building. Most buildings, I have no debt. Most clubs, I have no debt. Look at my greatest assets. I have no debt. I didn't even include, like, brand value. And the brand value is, I became president because of the brand, let's say. But the brand value is, it's one of the most valuable brand values. So I think it's, I wouldn't swap it for any other brand in the world.
He was standing there in 40 Wall Street as he made those comments that sound like something straight out of The Art of the Deal, that 1987 book that turned Trump, the man, into Trump, the myth, and made him a household name. But joining me tonight is the man who actually wrote that book that had Trump's name on it, author Tony Schwartz. And Mr. Schwartz, it's great to have you here. I mean, as you know, probably better than anyone else, given the time you spent with him to write that book, he puts up a good front. But when you get to the man who's behind the curtain, what do you think he's more worried about tonight? This criminal trial that's approaching or the money that he's going to have to pay for the bond tonight?
Money always comes first. And it's not just whether he has a lot of money, because he has plenty of money to do whatever he wants to do. It's really the psychological impact of appearing to be less than he has always claimed to be. You know, just listening, Caitlin, to the set of remarks that you threw up there, there is so little that he says that is true. I sometimes wonder if there's anything he says that's true anymore. There are probably 10 or 12 lies in what he just said, including the preposterous notion that he doesn't have a lot of debt. Of course he has a lot of debt, but he is fully capable of just saying something that is completely deceitful. Why? Why is he capable of it? Because he's a sociopath. And that's really the most important thing for people to realize, that a sociopath, not just a person who's self-absorbed and narcissistic, but a sociopath has no conscience. And a sociopath, therefore, can say anything and never feel an ounce of guilt. And what he's done is he's almost made sociopathy contagious. He's almost made it okay to say whatever you want, whether it's true or not, and to be proud of having lied about it. We look at that even with Rhonda McDaniel right now. No wonder it's blowing up. This is a person who lied continuously to many of the people who just agreed to hire her. What are we thinking? We've lost our way. We've lost our way.
When you say that people aren't always capable of realizing, you know, what he says and what the actual truth is, you know, how does a moment like the one that we're in, where he can't put up that $500 million bond, despite claiming he had $500 million, you know, why doesn't that break through to people, do you think?
Because he has set himself with the one skill Donald Trump has, and it is literally the only skill, is to play people, is to be, what's the word for it? He is capable of making people believe something that is utterly preposterous simply by repeating it over and over and over again. So it knocks truth out of the equation.
But it's notable what you just said there, referencing Ronna Romney McDaniel and, you know, her efforts, either just what she publicly said about the election, things that weren't true, her own actions related to it. You're basically saying that Trump has taken Trumpism and it's pervasive now. It's something that's not just limited to him, the individual. It's spread to everybody.
Yeah, I don't want to say to everybody. I hope it hasn't spread to you, and I hope it hasn't spread to me. But it's spread very, very wide, and it's spread around the world. This whole sort of we're unmoored from reality. You know, if you have a tree that has very shallow roots, what happens to that tree is that when the wind blows, the branches, you know, move in the, you know, in response to the prevailing winds, and conscience is blowing in the wind. Conscience is blowing in the wind. It's not a quality that you get much credit for anymore. Truthfulness is not so important in the firmament.
I have to get your take on something he said, because I was rereading today your thoughts when he came down that escalator, announced he was running for president, and said, because he wrote The Art of the Deal, that made him qualified, and you said, well, great, I'll run for president since I'm actually the one who wrote it. He was asked today about this idea of maybe taking foreign money to help with his legal troubles. This is what he said in response to that.
I think you'd be allowed to, possibly. I don't know. I mean, if you go borrow from a big bank,
Many of the banks are outside of this. As you know, the biggest banks, frankly, are outside of our country. So you could do that, but I don't need to borrow money. I have a lot of money.
Do you think he'd do that?
100% without any question. In a New York minute, or a London minute, or a Middle Eastern minute. But he is more than willing to do anything right now. I mean, look at his range of remarks over the last month or two. I would say even earlier in his presidency, many of the things he said over the last several weeks would have eliminated him, would have destroyed him. But he is, as a writer in the New York Times said today, he is now a gangster. You know, he's a mafia don. He's, you know, it's mind-boggling to think that this is a person who people can look at and say, oh, he's a reasonable choice to be president of the United States. He belongs in a prison. And, you know, we'll see whether that gets adjudicated before the election. But that's where he belongs.
Tony Schwartz, great to have your perspective on this tonight.
Thank you.
We'll have some legal analysis on what we heard from Mr. Schwartz there, and also just on what this criminal trial will actually look like when it plays out just 3 weeks from today. Will the former president himself take the stand? Could that cause him trouble based on what the person who ghostwrote his book just said? Back in a moment.
The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish. There's been a ton of writing about the album Cowboy Carter since it dropped this spring. But what grabbed my attention is a new documentary on CNN called Call Me Country, Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Lots of artists have tried to boot scoot their way onto country music charts. Why did this album cause such a stir? And what about both this pop star and this political moment has caused all this conversation? Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
When Donald Trump becomes the first former president to stand trial on criminal charges next month, jurors could actually hear from Trump himself on the witness stand.
Will you testify if that trial goes forward in 3 weeks?
I would have no problem testifying. I didn't do anything wrong.
Despite Trump's efforts to keep them off the stand in the New York hush money trial, prosecutors have also lined up some pretty familiar names as their potential star witnesses. Michael Cohen, who you've seen on this show, who was Trump's longtime lawyer and fixer, along with Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal. Both of those women say that they had affairs with Donald Trump and that they were paid off to keep quiet about it. We have former federal prosecutors Elliot Williams and Shan Wu here to break it all down. Elliot, just if you're the prosecutor here, do you want Donald Trump taking the stand?
Absolutely, positively, to a mathematical certainty, yes, Caitlin, you absolutely want Donald Trump to take the stand. Now, look, defendants in the United States have a right not to take the stand. You know the language. You have the right to remain silent. Well, that extends to trial as well. He does not have to. And frankly, many people want to take the stand in their own defense to try to clear their own names. And jurors often are suspicious when defendants don't take the stand, to the point that judges often instruct juries, as they will in New York, don't draw anything from a defendant's choice not to testify. Donald Trump would be a disaster on the witness stand because he can't control what he says. He is at the mercy of the prosecutor who's cross-examining him. And every statement that he's made in the past that contradicts anything at trial could probably be used against him. So it could be really bad. And I'm sure that his attorneys would probably advise him it wouldn't be a great idea.
Well, Shan, we did see him testify in civil court and the civil trial that he was under. Of course, you know, he had to be reprimanded by the judge. The judge was saying, don't say these untrue things, don't go on these rants. I mean, how would that play in a criminal court?
Totally agree with Elliot. I think those examples of his behavior in the civil trials would be Exhibit A as to why he'll be a disaster in a criminal trial. And very importantly, a lot of the civil trials he's been in, those have been bench trial. There's no jury there. And it's much more damaging to his own cause when he's in front of a jury seeing that kind of behavior versus a judge. I mean, in part, I think that's why he was allowed himself to go so far off the rails in those cases. I think he's aware of the difference between the jury and the bench trial. But with a jury trial, much more damaging.
Yeah, that's a good point, because in the last case, it was just a judge who was in there who was making that ultimate determination about how big his bond or his judgment was going to be in the civil fraud case. And Elliot, we heard from Trump after it was decided by the judge to not delay this case any further, to keep that April 15th start date. This is what he said after, and I should note, these are several false statements by the former president.
I don't know that you're going to have the trial. I don't know how you can have a trial like this in the middle of an election, a presidential election. And this is, again, this is a Biden trial.
It's not a Biden trial. I should note that this is brought by the Manhattan District Attorney. But, I mean, is there anything that says you can't have a trial in an election year?
No, there really isn't. Now, the Justice Department in Washington, the federal Justice Department, not the state of New York, has a policy of not initiating new actions, not arresting people or searching people's houses in the 2 months before an election, of a candidate, so as not to put a thumb on the scale of an election. But a trial, frankly, that was filed in March of 2023 can take place in an election season. Nothing prohibits that, and that's simply wrong. And the idea that it's a Biden trial, when in fact it is brought by state, local prosecutors in New York, is simply a lie. It is not true.
Yeah, I mean, Shan, it's been almost a year to the day since Alvin Bragg, the district attorney here, brought this case. What did you make of what he said about it? Because he's going to be saying that, the entire 6 weeks this trial plays out.
Yeah, that's about all he has to say about it. If I were Trump today, I would be furious with my defense counsel because they are not putting on a good show for him. I mean, they botched that hearing today. And worst of all, I think from Trump's point of view, they have signaled their fear of the main prosecution witnesses, Stormy Daniels, Michael Cohen. They're so afraid of them that they filed this silly motion to exclude their testimony, and they got slam dunked, lost on that. So that really bodes well, and they've shown exactly what they are most afraid of and where their weaknesses are. So I think it really bodes very poorly for him at trial.
Well, Elliot, one of the parts that was, for those who weren't watching, every minute of it today, of the back and forth with the judge and Trump's team, was on these documents that they have now gotten that are related to Michael Cohen, who we do expect to testify. He told us he's prepared to testify at that. And essentially, Trump's team could not point to a specific number of documents that they now believe could be included here. They'd claimed they could be exculpatory and also couldn't say, exactly what it was that they may use. I mean, is that part of they're not wanting to give away what their defense is going to be? What'd you read into that?
No, I mean, I think it's probably they're being cute. Now, the simple fact is a defendant is entitled to see the evidence against him. And if it's in the form of documents, they're entitled to see them. But if you're claiming that prosecutors are hiding documents or engaging in misconduct or whatever else, you have to be able to back that up. And you can't simply wave a magic wand as an attorney and say that, there's a certain number of documents that we think are out there that we haven't seen. And no, I actually, just based on what I saw, it seemed that they were playing a little fast and loose there. And the judge did, at a couple points today, scold them for it in terms that, frankly, as a lawyer, it's very lonely and hurts to have that happen when you're standing up in court and you lose the judge's favor.
A lot of attorneys who wish they had magic wands. Elliot Williams, Shan Wu, thank you so much for being here tonight.
Good to see you.
Take care.
And of course, as all of these legal cases are piling up in legal fees, potentially costing him a fortune, there is a notable development on the other side of Trump's money tonight where he could potentially stand to earn a fortune. Billions, I'm talking about here, because Truth Social, his website, is going to begin trading in just hours from now. More on how and why after a quick break. Tonight, as we speak, Donald Trump may be heading toward what amounts to ultimately be a multi-billion dollar windfall. His estimated net worth doubled just today as Truth Social closes its deal to go public ahead of trading that is expected to start tomorrow. Bloomberg estimates tonight that his net worth spiked by $4 billion just today to $6.5 billion. It's quite the change of fortune, considering just this morning he was staring down a $500 million bond deadline, with the attorney general here in New York poised to seize his assets. Joining me tonight is senior Forbes editor Dan Alexander. And Dan, I know you've been covering Truth Social and this saga that it's been on, for years now. And it generated I was looking at the numbers, $3.4 million of revenue through the first 9 months of last year. And it posted a net loss of $49 million over that span. I think the question given how much money it's about to make him. Is Truth Social a good business?
Truth Social is a bad business. You know, the founding premise of this business was that Twitter was too liberal and everybody who was conservative needed to move onto Trump's platform. Well, now it's been operating for a few years and Trump has less than 7 million followers on his platform compared to 87 million that he still has on Twitter. As you pointed out, the revenue is next to nothing. They're generating roughly a dollar of revenue per user, whereas they were predicting that they were going to generate roughly $13 per user by 2026. So by any measure, this business has been a failure. But that doesn't mean just that a business is a failure. It doesn't mean that there can't be mania around it, which is what you're seeing in the public markets right now.
Well, I mean, but walk us through that. How is this happening? If it's not a good, if it's a bad business, how are we about to witness, you know, what's happening tomorrow with when it starts trading?
Well, there are a lot of people who, although the financials are terrible and the business operations don't look to be strong, love the hope of, that this brings. And Trump is a master at creating hype, and this is a perfect example of it. So they're investing. These are retail investors, mom and pop people who believe in Donald Trump or maybe just want to get in on the next, you know, meme stock craze and are willing to gamble some money on it, are investing huge amounts of money to buy a couple of shares or in some cases hundreds of thousands of shares, betting that someday either this business will become successful or there will be somebody else who's even less concerned about the financials than they are, that they will pay a higher price for it. It's a classic bubble stock. There have been a lot of meme stocks in the last few years. And if you take Trump, the meme stock era, combined with the SPAC merger, you've got all of the ingredients for a super hyped up vehicle. And that's what we're seeing, although it has no relationship to the actual financials or performance of the business.
I mean, that's just so striking as we've been talking about this like arc of Donald Trump's finances from, you know, the beginning of the show to right now, what's going to happen tomorrow. I mean, it seems to have a lot of parallels to what we've seen him do in the past.
That's right. You know, if you go back to the start of Donald Trump's career, he's always found people who were willing to give him piles of cash, even when they should have been wary of doing just that. So this started in Atlantic City, first with traditional banks who were willing to finance these enormous projects that he was building there on the beach. Then after many of them went bankrupt, he went to the public markets in the mid-1990s. And there were lots of retail investors back then who said, "Ooh, Trump's exciting. We want to get in on his casino ventures." And they bet on him. Ultimately, that publicly traded company declared bankruptcy twice and Trump sort of left in disgrace. Then he started selling these developments with his name on it, where many of the people who were interested in getting into the developments didn't realize that they weren't Trump's products. They were other people's, but he was just putting his name on them. But he made a bunch of cash in those, even in cases where the ventures failed. And now we have yet again him finding meme stock traders and his political followers who are willing to throw money at him, even though it makes no financial sense.
So what's tomorrow? What's it actually going to look like for him specifically?
So the bell's going to ring and all of a sudden, you know, this stock is going to be trading and he's going to be sitting on an enormous pile of shares that could theoretically be worth a lot of money. Now, here's the really important caveat here. Donald Trump cannot sell or even borrow against these shares for about 6 months until his lockup period is over. In those 6 months, he has a delicate dance to play because on the one hand, he has to keep people excited about this business, even though its financials are a disaster. And then in 6 months, if he is smart about it, he will want to dump all of his shares. And so it's a really cynical play to try to keep everybody along with him for as long as he can until he finally pulls the rug out from under them. And then at that moment, if he does dump, except for one, he still, because of an unusual provision in how this deal is struck, will still be able to maintain control of the company.
Dan Alexander, I mean, it will be a fascinating 6 months to see what happens there in the end with his shares. Great to have your reporting on this. Thank you so much for covering it so closely.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for joining us. Laura Coates Live starts right now.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.